From Puebla, it's Austin, Texas. This is Stacker News Live!
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Stacker News Live. My name is Carl. I'm at BFF Keon, and Topher Scott's in the house. Hey, everybody.
He's at least seated at the table. He doesn't have a microphone, so he's he's off camera. He's just keeping a close watch on, making sure we don't say anything too silly.
I mean, we're going to talk about quantum today, so maybe he'll come in and talk about that stuff. Keon, how was your week?
It was great. I binge drank one of the days, and then another day, I went to a Theo Von, would you call it a concert? Show. Theo Von's show. Because he's like getting close to recording his special. So his material was presumed to be ripe and ready for, I think he's been torn with that material for like 3 years. And it was good. It was a good show. He seemed kind of agitated or anxious, but otherwise it was a good show. There were lots of bits in there I thought that were very strong. It's always a bit of a dice roll when you go to a podcaster that you find funny and you go to their stand-up show, because sometimes it doesn't translate. Sometimes they're funny in an interview situation or, you know, just in front of a microphone with a camera, and then at other times not on stage. But Theo's funny on stage, and he has a lot more, his stage presence, it's more physical than I would have presumed. Anyway, that was my week. How about yours, Carr? How was your week?
It was good. I had a birthday week. I had like two birthday parties this past week.
Wow.
One with my family, one with you guys.
Whose birthday was that?
It's my birthday.
Oh.
And then it was cool, man. We got really drunk. Me and Keon got really drunk.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, that was fun.
Yeah, we set this place on fire, dude. The roof was like actually on fire.
Oh, it turns out it was just a dishwasher.
Yeah.
It was a dishwasher on the fourth floor.
I asked the security guy. Yeah. That's what I said.
Yeah. I didn't even know dishwashers
could smoke. I thought they were full of water.
You would think, right? You would think that, but maybe it was the electrical behind the dishwasher. That's the only thing I could think
they're
of.
They're usually underneath. I said it was an old dishwasher.
They use a different voltage, don't they? Like they use the same ones, the same as the refrigerators, or no?
They use 120 volt, usually.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But yeah, it was a great week. And it's also Holy Week this week, so a lot of stuff going on at church. So it's just been... Yeah, it doesn't usually happen, like, where my birthday falls into the same week as Holy Week, but it has happened in the past, like, a long time ago, when I was younger. It was the last time it probably happened. When it does, it's always, like, really kind of special. It makes it a really special week. Cool. We're going to jump into the top. If you've never seen this crazy show before, it's called Stacker News Live. It's the front page of Bitcoin. Bum, bum, bum. Pay to post and earn sats. Last week's most popular video was the, where was it at? It was the Elon one. So apparently when we were talking about Elon, a lot of people tuned in for that. They love Elon and the tariff app stuff. If you didn't see the sharks and cocaine one, that was a hilarious segment. You should probably look at that. And then Wumble's posting more stuff there. So, yeah, check it out.
Check it out and don't subscribe.
Check it out. Don't subscribe.
Yeah.
Just watch live. The other thing I was going to say is, I think that's it. Let's jump into the top three stories this week. The number three top story this week is watch Bitcoin's mempool as a live traffic simulation. This is highway and space theme from Rob Revolver. Six comments, 9,458 sats. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, it's just a fun visualization of transactions coming into the mempool. Visualized as cars on a road, and you can kind of and then there's like a little graphic on the bottom there where you can see the transactions coming in and waiting to be mined at a red light. It's just a kind of, I think they're polling mempool for this data and then visualizing it. I don't know what the extreme fear one means.
They should add Frogger so you can play Frogger during this. That would be a lot of fun, because imagine you just like hop there and be like, oh, I'm crossing.
You can also switch it to space mode.
You go hop crossing there, and then you go over there, and then you hop cross.
I've never played Frogger.
Like, I think that would be pretty cool. And then you get to the top, and maybe it gives you like some Bitcoin or something. Yeah.
Yeah, no one wants to give you Bitcoin. If you hit next where Classic is, if you hit space, it'll switch to spacecraft rather than cars.
Yeah.
Do you not want to hit it?
No, I was just listening to what they were saying. We have some people that are visiting the lab right now at the same time.
But you were saying yes, so, like you were responding. Like
yeah, I know. Right? I always do that with you. You finally caught me. I'm just kidding.
I just wanted to make it. I know you don't listen to me, but I wanted to make it clear to the viewers.
No, I was literally listening. It's just like there's people who are here trying to come inside, and I don't know what's going on because it looks like...
Yeah, listening involves actually processing.
I wish I could point the camera this way so people could see what's going on. Looks like an altercation. Anyways, we're going to keep rolling. So this is cool, Keon. I like it.
Glad you like it.
Yeah. Who made it?
I don't know. Someone just zapped it. Someone shared it, and then someone zapped it a lot. So it made it into the top story.
Ooh. Space.
They're probably German, I think.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. See, this one we could do like a Galaga. Oh, man. Just go boom, 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 try to shoot them down like little aliens.
So you made like a Blues Clues voice there.
No. That's cool, man. This is really neat. Yeah, I'm going to probably just throw it on this TV all day, right? I mean, who doesn't want to look at this?
I mean, this is, yeah, a more fun visualization than, like, all the...
The other one that we have there?
Yeah.
Whatever that one's called.
It's more fun to look at.
Yeah, I like this one.
Or we can make this our own.
Yeah. Cool stuff. What did Stacker say? Top comment was from Scoresby. He said, this is great. Did you come up with this idea? He said, I just found the spaceship version. Somebody else said NGL. Oh, Blockchain Book said NGL. This is cool.
Oh, I wonder what Schmitty shared down there.
Oh, Schmitty shared truckyard.live. What is this? Oh, this is another one.
Oh,
wow. That's interesting.
Oh, cool. But it has, it visualizes truck transactions.
This is kind of cool. Whoa. And then you submit a traction? Submit a transaction?
You can broadcast them.
Oh, wow. I bet you there's like somebody should make like a whole list of these. I bet you there's so many visualizers. I only know like the big ones. But
I know there was a South Park one, South Park theme one,
really?
Where like kids getting onto a bus and waiting at like a bus stop.
These are always neat, man. These would make like a really good like widget on your watch or something, or on your like phone. You know what I mean? If you could shrink it down that high, if that small.
Yeah, they're fun.
They're fun. Look at this one. This one's speeding through. Oh, wait. Did I stop him? Oh, I did stop him. That's cool. Wait a second. Boom. Stop him right there. 7 sats per V-byte? That's kind of pricey. 2 sats per V-byte? What's going on? Anyways, yeah, that's cool. So check it out. TXRush.com or the other one, which was called truckyard.live. We're going to go to the number 2 top story this week. It's personal sats inflation, part 5, March 2026, featuring QOQ numbers. This is from Unboiled, 8,058 sats. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, so Unboiled did another monthly update on their sats inflation. We covered this, I think, about a month ago on Stacker News Live, where they described the sats per unit change that they experienced as they paid for things like electricity, fuel, milk, and phone data in South America. And up until that point, I think they'd been doing it for I don't know, a year or so, at least the time that they were located in South Africa, and they could spend sats on these things. It looked like they were experiencing inflation as priced in sats. And it was... I think this year was maybe their best year in terms of deflation. And from the tables that were up there before, you could see that they're paying less, 11% less in electricity, 8% less in fuel, 5% less in milk.
Milk, yeah, that's interesting.
So, and they, although they didn't have data for phone or water, they estimate that they probably would have paid less in sats this past month. So that's good news for their Bitcoin, for their holdings, and they give us an update on their plans for the rest of the year. I guess they're leaving South Africa because they're a nomadic family, and they're going to be traveling across Europe and Asia until South Africa is back in summer. And yeah, and so they won't have an update for us, and they don't want to do exchange rate pricing. They don't want to pay for things in fiat and then tell us what that costs them in sats. They don't. They think that kind of messes with the experiment a bit, or the purity, which I think is makes sense. So we'll have to wait until they go back to South Africa 6 months or so from now, and for the next update. But that's it. There was a bit of sats deflation this past month.
Yeah, that is interesting. So they basically have lived just with sats, huh?
At least for as much as they can.
That's cool.
Very only possible numbers. In South Africa.
Is this the same people that shared like all the photos and stuff where they were mining too and stuff? Or is this a different...
This is from Unboiled, who I don't think they're. I don't think they've shared much in terms of mining.
It looks like there's one from before too. So,
yeah, that was the one we covered a month ago.
Interesting. Yeah. So was it better? Oh, it looks like it was better. Interesting. And then you go back to part three. Oh wow. Yeah. So it looks like they've done better over time.
Yeah. Before in most of the posts in this series, the Bitcoin price was, or the exchange rate was falling.
I feel like these type of people we should get for like AMAs, man. Like,
what would you ask?
Really interesting questions.
I just meant you could probably ask here on this podcast, and they might hear it in the next post. They might
probably
address
not listen to this, right?
What'd you say?
They're probably not listening to this.
Fair. I don't think anyone listens to this. Why would they?
It looks like Scoresby's asking, thanks for doing this. This is an excellent series, and one to which I always look forward to. Well done. I just want to say, really enjoyed this. Look forward to. Here goes. Steck Carter said, do you see much more BTC adoption in SA these days? Do you feel safe and whatnot? And he goes, I do notice more interest than in many other places, but that may be well because I know a lot of Bitcoiners. He said, do you feel safe? Yes, but I also know what to look out for. Which situations to avoid in which areas during what times. So, yeah. Interesting. That's cool. Well, thanks for posting this on board. I look forward to the next one next month. The number one top story this week is Foundry 7-block streak. Luck or structural edge? Question mark. The consecutive block ADV. This is from Saru. 11,400 Keon, what's this?
Yeah, so Saru did another Bitcoin data project, I think, or a Bitcoin data labs project where he, following the seven consecutive block streak that we saw from Foundry recently that we covered on the last Stacker News Live, which also coincided with a two-block reorg, they went and looked at whether there was anything stranger than you expect going on, because most of us kind of assume that a miner will mine blocks in proportion to how much hash rate they have, and so that means that they should be getting two consecutive blocks or three consecutive blocks with a like over time at a certain average, and it appears that these consecutive blocks happen more frequently than we would estimate, which suggests that there are other dynamics going on. And so they investigated some hypotheses related to what could be going on, things like header-only mining, mining empty blocks, things like pools colluding with each other or sharing block headers with each other before they've broadcast them to the rest of the network. Are you listening to music or?
No, I'm listening to you.
Okay, and you, I just have like such a musical cadence that you like to dance to it. And then I think another possibility they looked at was pools not somehow hiding their hash rate. They call it ghost hash rate or ghost mining. They concluded they didn't really see any evidence of anything like that. It mostly appears to be a block latency thing. So you broadcast them, and a lot of if miners are co-located or near each other, they're just more likely to get the block headers sooner, and will begin mining faster than other network participants, and that that's likely why we're seeing things that look a little, or that's why we had the block reorg. And yeah, I thought it was, I mean, it's pretty cool. You can go in and kind of really dive deep in this stuff. They use data from the BNOC project to do this work. And then they did, I think they, and then before that they used data from, I think that LOP had archived from his node that he had shared on GitHub at some point, I think. But yeah, I love his stuff. It's pretty cool. It's kind of hard to know what to think, and people can say a lot of things without backing up with data, and this makes it easy to back stuff up with data.
Yeah, check out the GitHub. Suru posted it here. Yeah. Shrukumar/Bitcoin-mining-pools on GitHub. Man, this looks really, really, like, in-depth, man. He's added a lot of stuff since the last time I've seen this site, which wasn't too long ago, actually. Cool stuff, man. We got the top comment from Scoresby. Said, your forensic dashboard is pretty awesome. I'm shocked that I didn't know about it. Great work on this. I think I need to spend a few days looking at it. There's so much there. Suru said, thanks, feedback. Welcome as you explore. I've been debating whether to expand the pool profile behavior section. Would be great if it actually helps miners decide where to mine. Optimus said, I also like it. Yes, SP2 would be great to see, or even anything proprietary from large pools like Ocean's proprietary solution. Cool stuff. Nice. And that's the number one story this week on Stacker News Live. We're going to jump into Wumble's Picks. Wumble's Picks. Wumble's Picks. Wumble Pick this week. Blocking the Internet Archive will erase the web's historical record. This is from Zus Posterico. Two comments, 1,766 cents. Keon, did you read this?
I did read it. It was Wumble's Pick. I'm fiduciary. I don't know what the right word is, but I'm obligated to read these when Wumba picks them. And it looks like this is written in response to the New York Times blocking the Internet Archive from archiving their articles. Usually, you know, what oftentimes when stuff is behind a paywall, many of us will go to an archive to the Internet Archive and ask it to archive the article for us so that we can read it without having to get behind the paywall. And the New York Times is now blocking that, so basically we won't have a historical record of any of the content on websites like New York Times, and they expect other publications to follow suit and more websites to do the same. And New York Times, I think, defended this by saying they were trying to protect themselves from AI scraping them without them getting compensated. Their argument is it kind of ruins this historical record that we have, where we can prove that a publication got updated without, you know, making a little notice on it, telling people that they updated it, or, you know, it just helps us keep track of things that have happened over time to these sites, and things that have happened in the world in many cases, because a lot of stuff that happens in the world gets reported on the internet. And so this is maybe... we don't want to see this trend continue is kind of their argument, and they hope that people don't do this. I experienced this week even before reading this article. I was trying to archive something from the New York Times. There was a story about a guy who runs a GLP-1 online company, you know, mostly staffed by AI, like a variety of AI agents that made like $2 billion, or expects to make $2 billion in revenue this next year. But I couldn't get it to work. And I didn't know why, and it just, I guess what happened was this. The New York Times stepped up their defenses against, you know, a kind of, what some people might call scraping.
Gatekeeping. Happens in the real world, too. That's interesting. He had a question. Let's see if we can go back there. Let's see here. Is the New York Times on the wrong side of history in trying to prevent web crawlers and AI from assessing their news articles? Keon, what do you think?
Well, I don't know what Side's history has. I think this is a short term thing for them. I think they're probably trying to increase subscribers. They probably would like these AI providers to pay them for any training data they are unintentionally creating. And so I'd guess that's why they're doing this. I think long-term, it will hurt them. I think long-term, it will hurt their relevance. I think they're going to not be served in AI results. They're not going to be referenced there when these bots want to provide references to things or customers request it, because they won't even be part of the training data. And those bots won't be able to crawl them to, use them as a reference. And these bots are increasingly the way that we interact with content on the internet. So I think they're just going to continue to lose relevance. I mean, I don't know what the right solution for them is, but, with technology, you tend to have to lean into it. It kind of has a direction to it, an arrow, and you can't really fight it. And I think that's what they're doing, and I think that will end up hurting them in the long run. It might help their quarterly subscriber numbers or something, but
I kind of see it a different way, but not too much, just almost like slightly. I think the biggest thing here with, like, he was talking about history, I think what Wumble's trying to say, like, how will this kind of play out it through history? And the only thing I can kind of equate it to, Wumble, is like the it's kind of like when the when people knew how to write. And then the Bible started getting spread everywhere. And then we saw it again with, like, the Gutenberg press, right? That was another thing. And this kind of reminds me of that kind of moment now, where maybe AI is kind of like that kind of technology, where it's just shifting the way people share things and remix things. And maybe we're entering that kind of, like, moment in time. So I don't know if that's the right side or the wrong side, but that's kind of where my intuition's kind of telling me that's kind of where we're at. And then as far as, like, the other question he had in there was, like, the web crawlers thing. Yeah, I think I agree with Keon. It's like, it's kind of one of those things, like, those people need to get paid for their writing and stuff like that, but it's like, how do you figure out how to pay them in this kind of shift? But it kind of goes back to, like, we look through history and we see that, maybe there's, like, one person in town that knew how to write and knew how to speak or that language or whatever, or write in that language, just to say, like, what happened when, like, all of a sudden everybody knows how to write and has a pen, So it's kind of one of those things. It's like, maybe they didn't get paid the same. Maybe they got paid less because now everybody has it. So I don't know. Just kind of, I don't know if that answers his question or not.
Well, only Wumble can decide. Wumble will pick who answered better.
Wumble's picks. We'll see you next time on Wumble's picks. Yeah. There you go, Boog. You'll like that one. We're going to jump into the AI stuff. I want to share this one because Carvalho wrote this, and then he posted it on Snacker News. He kind of posted it everywhere, but I don't think it got a lot of traction. It's called The Age of Social Intelligence. This was a fascinating one. So he kind of writes his kind of this kind of thesis of, like, AI is eating the world, and, like, what is the next big thing? Everybody's trying to predict that. And he kind of talks. I don't want to say he's not going to talk. He's talking his book, but he's talking about how, like, PubKey's trying to change that. And I thought he did a really good job of explaining, like, he says it here. For most of human history, social intelligence was intrinsic. You knew community, reputation traveled by word of mouth. Trust was earned in person, tested over time, and contextual. You didn't trust your butcher, all that sort of thing. And he goes, but now discovery became algorithmic. Reputation became captive to accounts you don't own. And he thinks that's where, a lot of this stuff is kind of going to start changing. And this is where he's been really harping in on the semantic social graph that he's been talking a lot about. And I don't have to go too much into it, but I did want to share a video here at the bottom. And they kind of go through PubKey. And you can kind of see, like, how he's implementing that in there.
An emoji here.
I think one of the most interesting things, I've used it, I haven't used this latest version, are the tags. I think the tags are the most interesting thing when it comes to PubKey. But he's definitely taken a different approach, and we've had him on the show before, and he's kind of explained this before, but just wanted to share that because I feel like John always puts a really strong effort in like getting his points across, and then he also does a really good job of trying to get feedback on those points. So just wanted to share that. Keanu, did you check this out? Have you played with PubKey at all?
I didn't see this. I tried it during their private beta that they invited, I think, mostly developers and other people who are developer adjacent and Bitcoin too. So I'm familiar with the concept, and I tried the BitKey wallet or PubKey wallet. I don't know. Is it BitKey? Or is BitKey the block wallet?
Yeah.
Maybe they both have the same name.
Talk about BitKit.
BitKit. There you go. BitKit wallet. That's it. And so I'm familiar with what he's trying to do broadly, and I think it's an interesting, compelling approach to solving some of the problems that either traditional social media has, or problems that Nostr is taking a slightly different approach to. And I think it's pretty cool. And I think John also recently was renewed. It's not a grant, but I think his team received funding again from Tether. So they're gonna keep building out Synonym and PubKey. And so I'm looking forward to seeing what they do.
It's kind of cool. I feel like now that we've kind of seen Synonym kind of play out the past 4 or 5 years, whatever it's been, I do get the sense that he's kind of like their lab, that he's just kind of like, just, you know, he basically just is able to paint, right, with his team. And I think that's probably the coolest thing about that specific company. It's just like, and John has like these really big ideas, and a lot of them are, I would say, they're definitely, someone needs to address them. And it's cool that... that somebody like John is actually like, you know, going after these big ideas, and it's money well spent, in my opinion. So, anyways, just wanted to share that because I thought that was a good article. The other one was the, let's go into this one. The OpenAI acquires TBPN. I don't know if you saw this one, Keon, but OpenAI, OpenAI acquired the podcast network, a podcast network. That's like really popular on Twitter.
Yeah. I never watched their show. I do see their clips in my feed on X occasionally. But it always looked like super dystopian and like a parody of a news show or a podcast, which it just kind of distracted me aesthetically. And so I never watched them. Even though they'd have guests that I wouldn't mind hearing from. Because it just seemed like they were trying to fuck with me, and hey, you know, so maybe that means it's a great pairing for OpenAI and the dystopia they plan to create. You want to line up the symbology and the aesthetic. I wonder what they're going to do with them. I think Sam Altman, you shared a tweet in that thread from Sam Altman where he. He's like, we bought them because we like them. They're not going to do any. They're not going to promote anything from OpenAI, or say, you know, hold. What is it called? Like, hold back your punches. Hold back. Pull punches. They're not going to pull punches towards OpenAI. And then why buy them? It doesn't really make any sense. But so I suspect there will be. This is like a Washington Post. Type acquisition, maybe, like when Bezos acquired Washington Post and would kind of like push narratives. Like if they're not going to be directly doing OpenAI promotion, like lobbying on a social platform level, they are probably going to be shaping tech narratives that suits OpenAI, or he's just like outright lying. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they were really popular on Twitter. Because I think they would get, like, the most views, the most everything, just based off of what I've seen. Like, I would see their clips all the time, when, especially when it comes to the AI stuff. They're just, like, if you're doing AI and you're not on Twitter, you're kind of missing the boat on what's going on in AI. And these guys would always have some of the big names on their thing. And they're really young. They're, like, really young guys. Apparently, I think he said it in one of the tweets that they knew them, or they knew... One of them knew Sam, and so I guess through YC, through the YC days. So it was really cool to see, like, I guess that relationship has kind of flourished, and so it also felt kind of like it was probably, not gonna say planned, but it was definitely talked about probably over dinners, I'd imagine. But really interesting stuff. Looking forward to seeing what kind of happens next, because this definitely gets me on their radar now, because I wasn't, like you, I wasn't really a listener. I was more of, like, a clip viewer. But what I did see in the clips, I definitely liked. I think the interviewing style that they do, like, the back-and-forth interviewing style, is, like, really, really good. It's, like, really top-notch. But I'm going to probably be following them more closely now because, I mean, outside of them and the, what's the other one? The Jason Calacanis podcast?
All in?
Yeah, outside of that one and this one, I don't know what other podcasts were at that level on Twitter that I would see. But, I mean, it makes sense, Sam buying them. Hmm. Interesting. Cool. The other big news that was kind of, I don't know if anybody's talking about this, but I saw this, that Blockchain Boog posted this week. U.S., or I should just read the thing. Japanese and U.S. companies have announced a launch of Portsmouth Consortium under the U.S.-Japan Strategic Trade and Investment Agreement to support large-scale power generation and AI infrastructure development in Piketon, Ohio. I don't know if you saw this, but that's a lot of Bitcoin. Here, let me close that. Right there. 9.2 gigawatt. Topher, what do you think about that? 9.2 gigawatt.
Enough to travel back in time.
Oh, about that?
Do you think you can travel back in time with only 9.2 gigawatts? Like, once we eventually have time machines, have OpenAI design and create our time machines for us, and with Optimus robots, yeah. Do you think it'll only take 9.2 gigawatts?
I don't know. I'm only going by, like, Hollywood math here.
Okay. I'd love to see that math textbook. Hollywood math textbook. But
they're going to invest a total of $500 billion to break ground on the data center within this year. That's incredible. And it's in Ohio.
Bro, I guess they're near all that water, so they're probably, like, a lot. It's probably a lot of hydro in Ohio, I imagine. Or I know there's coal up there, too. Probably got all kinds of... All kinds of wattage up there.
I guess Boog got the early leak, I guess. I don't know what's going on here. Or he falls all this stuff, right? His thoughts, Boog's thoughts, was in, I ain't watering 7.5 million. Bitcoin is crazy. KMI is getting in on this action. This AI race is something incredible. I really do believe it's getting so big. If anything starts to fail, expect a bailout. ! Boog out. That's what he said. Boog out! What do you think, Keon?
About what?
About what Boog said there.
The AI race is incredible, and it's getting big, and it might fail.
!
And it might get bailed out. Why not? Why, that seems consistent with what's happened throughout history, at least recent history.
Optimism said, just means Bitcoin is undervalued, right? Right. And Blockchain Book says, right, this is my go with Stacker News and my construction engineering territory. The Chronicle. It's chronicling everything. I love it. Love to see it. Boop. That was the other one. That was all the AI stories I think I had this week. Let's jump into Keon stories. BitProjects-IO turns off its 3,000 plus nodes. Bitcoin Network keeps on going. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, so BitProjects.io is a project that someone created to communicate. it appears that they were attempting to communicate to people that node count doesn't matter, and that you can have, with some modest resources, you could make it appear like one node was several, in this case, several thousand. Because there was a lot of, over the last 6 months or so, there's been a lot, specifically from the Knots camp, there's a lot of noise about Knots nodes coming online. And I think their point was that it doesn't really mean anything. It's easy to Sybil node count because they're not doing any work. They're mostly residing, and they have like an IP address allocated to them is at most what you can say about them. And they bought an IP address block, and they, with a little bit of networking magic, they made probably tens of nodes appear like several thousand, and proved, I think, that you can't rely on node count for social consensus or any kind of consensus, really. They described the setup there. They had a 10 gig link. They had three Dell nodes. They had a half of a rack that was co-located. And they have other router configuration stuff, HA proxy. Okay, yeah, they said they had 12 to 36 times LXC Bitcoin nodes. I think LXC is a containerization framework. I thought that was interesting. And the story was about them shutting down that project. And a lot of people noticed that they were shutting it down because they began to get a lot more incoming connections, like a huge uptick. 0xb10c shared a graph of the increase of incoming connections that they received because all of the nodes that were previously connected to these 3,000 fake nodes needed to find new nodes to connect to, and everyone's nodes on the network saw new incoming connections.
Yeah, so it looks like the top comment was from 02AD8. He said, so what's the vulnerability? I don't get it. And then Darrow Zero said, right, that made no sense at all. And what was the point of using all of those nodes to signal for BIP110?
The vulnerability was mostly, it's not at, like, Bitcoin, it's not a vulnerability in Bitcoin, it's a vulnerability in some of the way Bitcoin influencers on X primarily were thinking about Bitcoin. That it's a vulnerability in those people's thinking about what node count and version of Bitcoin software as communicated by node count means. It means not nothing, maybe not nothing, but very close to nothing, practically nothing. You can't count on it for anything.
Interesting stuff. Let's jump into the next one that you had. It was quantum computing bombshells that are not April Fool's. This is from Scott Harrison. Scores, we posted it. 2,356 sats, Keon.
This week, there were two papers that came out about quantum stuff. One from Caltech showing that they could do quantum stuff with, I think, less work than they previously thought. I don't actually understand all the things involved in any of these quantum circuits, but they changed something about what they were doing and showed that it required less quantum things than it required before. And then similarly, Google showed that they had a quantum algorithm, like they implemented Shor's algorithm using a quantum circuit that required less qubits than was previously thought, I think by an order of magnitude. And I shared the Scott Aronson thing because he's an independent party who isn't associated with anyone who's, as far as I know, is profiting for one way or another, or he doesn't seem to have a bone to pick against Bitcoin. And largely his conclusion was that, this doesn't really change much, except that there's been, maybe once we solve the problem that quantum computers have not yet solved, that would require breaking elliptic curves, this might shorten the time. This might shorten the timeline a little bit, but it's still not determinate how long away this is. And so, is it 5 years, 10 years, much longer? All this does is kind of change what happens as we get once those fundamental problems are solved, which are indeterminate, the length of time that it might take to solve them. And so,
can you give Topher the mic real quick? Because I know he's working on some quantum stuff.
Yeah, but. Still kind of keeping that hush hush.
Okay.
Take but, that Wumble. Just kidding. Yeah, I mean, I feel like this is credible. I mean, this is just like the natural progression of science. And there's just too many advantages to quantum computing this is going to happen eventually. It's just a matter of, like, is it sooner rather than later? And
looks like this person's in Austin, too.
Yeah, they're a professor at UT.
Carr, you had this analogy the other day where it's like, you know, if you have this, like, crazy neighbor, and then your neighbor goes out and gets a gun.
That's for in-lab, like, talk only.
You know, maybe it would be nice that you have a gun, too.
I didn't say it like that. I said, because people were asking, we got into a big old discussion on quantum inside our Slack and stuff. And then, anyway, long story short, like, I was like, well, it's kind of one of those things where if your neighbor, meaning like the United States government, is like, just like shooting bullets in the air, like throwing ragers, like beating his wife, like doing all these different things, like at some point, And at some point, he's, like, coming over and knocking on your door and saying, hey, man, you want to come hang out with them? At some point, you're going to be like, you know, like, well, maybe I should protect myself just in case. Because, you know, if all I'm saying is, like, if the government gets a hold of this or if they're doing something with it, like, there's no telling what they're going to do with quantum and what they're going to attack with it. So as the next-door neighbor that is Bitcoin, I think it's probably wise to, like, maybe... I mean, we're always talking about, like, the government stuff in Bitcoin. And I feel like in this one scenario where it's, like, literally the government that is building out this stuff quietly, not telling anybody.
Yeah.
We're all kind of like, oh, no, but they're good on this stuff. Like, it's like, dude, they can't control themselves.
Yeah, like, why not have, like, a little quantum protection, right?
I don't know. I don't know. I just know then that's kind of analogy. It just makes sense to maybe have an idea of what's going on. But it looks like everybody does in Bitcoin.
Other people are already upgrading to post-quantum cryptography and different signature schemes. But I think
the debate for me personally has already, like, it doesn't, like, we were talking about narrative earlier, and the narrative's already out there. So people already believe that quantum's a potential threat to Bitcoin. That's just what people believe. I'm not saying it's the truth. It's just the narrative's out there. It's already been set. And I mean, this is why Sama bought that podcast, to set narrative. But I don't know, man.
Yeah. My concern isn't that, like, there's nothing we can do, because there's actually plenty of things that we can do. There's already, like, post-quantum cryptography that's being implemented all over the place. There's already, like, standards set for what post-quantum cryptography looks like what different algorithms should be used. Like, that process of converting over is already happening in technology in general. So it's just a matter of, like, okay, well, when is Bitcoin going to do it? And, like, what is it going to take for Bitcoin to do it? Like, is it going to take an attack? Is it going to take, like, somebody actually proving that a key was compromised and that funds were stolen? And when is it, like, too late? You know, like, my concern is that nothing happens until there's a provable attack that happens on Bitcoin. And then we're going to all panic and go, oh shit. Okay. Let's, like, grab whatever BIP is nearby on the shelf, and we're going to slap that on there. And then there's going to be, like, a mad dash for the exit, where, like, everybody's, like, rushing to now upgrade their money so that they're like moving funds into like some sort of post-quantum address. And that's just going to be like a really messy, panicky transition versus like a nice, smooth, you know, let's like do this fairly. If we were to just like start making this transition a lot earlier, not needing some sort of like disaster scenario to get our asses in gear, like that's my worry. What is it going to take for like Bitcoin to start making this transition?
I'm working on a piece. Like, I started researching some stuff last night. I'm going to write it out this weekend, but I really do think we're at a place now where people's decision making is now, like, if this whole narrative is the truth type of world we live in, it feels like it is. It does seem like people have stopped separating people and facts and vibes from what's actually important. If that makes any sense. It's almost like it's almost like it's trying to, people are subjecting themselves to this narrative and all this stuff, but are failing to realize that like the most important thing is like Bitcoin keeps going. I'm not saying that's happening. I'm just saying like there's some people on the other side of this that are just like, they don't even want to look at that. They don't even want to talk about it. They don't even want to like they can't step outside themselves to see like to assess it like rigorously with like reason and stuff like that. That's kind of my whole thing. It's just, I'm just surprised that a lot of people aren't even like taking it seriously enough to like reason through some of the probabilities.
Yeah. How do you wake people up, Carr?
I don't know.
How do you go like wake up sheeple?
I don't know. I would be curious, like, so when they do this stuff, Topher, are they using like are they using AI to like, not to write this obviously, or maybe they are, I don't know, but like I would imagine they have access to AI to like figure out, this is why we're seeing a lot of this like
They're using AI to make what, technological breakthroughs?
Yeah. Do you think?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely, they're doing that.
I was curious about that, like, because we've seen like a couple of these behind closed doors, and then get released later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy to see. I've seen whispers. People post stuff online where it's like, hey, I've been like working with Claude or Codex and putting together like different math proofs and like solving like these like complex problems, doing like combinations of like humans and AIs where they'll like sort of like formulate ways to like figure out these like tough problems in mathematics and cryptography, and then like figure out some sort of solution, and then have other researchers just like shit test it basically.
Yeah.
And so like I feel like AI is accelerating that, because just you can research things so much more quickly, and the AI is just, its domain knowledge is so massive, it just has this understanding of everything. Yeah, so there's just, like, crazy things happening in math, chemistry, biology, material science. Like, this is, like, all these, like, crazy advances that are happening. It's got to be happening in quantum, too. But, yeah.
So. I think the other really interesting thing that I've seen over and over is they're like, oh, but they won't attack Bitcoin. They'll attack all these other structures that the government controls, and they're like, but the one thing the government doesn't control is Bitcoin. And they're like, oh, but they're not going to attack that. I'm like, that's just dumb. That's like saying like the whole neighbor thing. It's like, oh, I'm okay because I'm friends with them. It's like, no, dude, eventually he's going to come after you too. I just don't believe that. I think that's just dumb thinking, like that the government won't attack Bitcoin once they have quantum figured out.
Why not?
I feel like it's the first thing to get people's attention.
Well, so, like, there's this thing where you'll have these insiders that know something, mm-hmm. whether it's, like, in a big company or in government. And so they know something that the public doesn't, and so they'll go on Polymarket and they'll like place these bets, and you know, then X happens and then they cash out and they make a bunch of money, and it's like, well, were they just really lucky in predicting that X would happen, or did they have like insider knowledge? And so, you know, a quantum attack on Bitcoin, it's not just like about stealing money from Bitcoin, a Bitcoiner. It's more like, well, you're going to cause this mass panic in the market, and then that movement itself is an asymmetry you can make money on, like tons of money on.
Yeah.
So I would think of it like, what is the dollar sign value on doing a quantum attack on Bitcoin from that perspective, like moving the market itself?
Yeah.
It's got to be a lot of dollar signs.
I will say, if the government's listening right now and they're thinking about attacking Bitcoin, go after Ethereum first. Go after like some of these other poop coins first. And then that way we get the jump on it. That's all I would ask.
Yeah, do ETH bros right even there, like Ethereum's argue
waiting,
about this
Ethereum's
stuff?
Ethereum's waiting for you right there. Just go attack.
Do you think ETH bros argue about like this quantum stuff?
No, because this is like, because they can just print more, right? Like, I feel like with Bitcoiners, we're a little bit more serious about it. Or it should be, but not everybody is. I would just advocate, let's go after Ethereum first. Let's go after some of these other shitcoins. Like, if you have a quantum computer, don't go after Bitcoin.
But that's where all the money is.
Yeah, I know. But I'm saying, like, yeah. Anyways, yeah, that's the quantum thing this week. Keon, do you have any other thoughts on it?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay.
Keon's done with the quantum.
Keon's done with the
quantum FUD.
People were talking about it, so I was like, let's mention someone who I would listen to, the guy who I've been paying attention to around the quantum stuff. And I don't get it all, but I want. That's how I keep track, most more or less, is by listening to that guy, the Scott Anderson guy.
Yeah, check it out, Scott Anderson. ScottErickson.blog. Yeah, I know Tover's been playing with some of this stuff, or he was telling me it was. So
he said it's quiet though. Here.
I said it twice, but they already know now. But anyway, Topher, keep me in the loop. Keep us in the loop. Anyways, cool stuff. We're gonna jump into Keon's final story this week. It was what problems exist when intelligence is free. This is from Roy, the Holograph Universe. 650 comments. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, I just thought this was an interesting question, or it led me to an interesting conclusion that I didn't really have before, which was that I think we all assume that when we have infinite intelligence and it's free and abundant and ubiquitous, that all of our problems are solved. And I think that's probably wrong. I think intelligence is a serious bottleneck for us right now, but I would guess that once intelligence is solved, we'll find another bottleneck shortly after. And I came to this conclusion after I was I think this was asked on a Saturday, and I was talking to Space Ted, and Space Ted was like, there was some anecdote where a group of people were asked, what is the meaning of life? And they said, food. And that's because food was the main scarcity of food was the main problem that they were facing. And so, like, all of their life was reduced to attempting to acquire more food. And I think that's kind of the situation that we're in right now, but rather than food, it's intelligence. And so we're, like, constrained around intelligence. We see that as, like, the main bottleneck to getting kind of what we want or having the life that we want. And we have to spend all this time exercising our own intelligence. And anyway, that was kind of... I don't have an answer of what exact problem will exist, because I think I'm too blinded by our need for more intelligence to come up with that answer. But I would guess there definitely are other things on the side of, or other problems on the other side of free intelligence.
Yeah, I think the biggest interesting thing about this is, like, you know, when you have like you said, it was like a free intelligence thing. I think the only other thing to work on at that point is like virtues and your capacity to love. And I think that's, to me, it's probably more of a chance now to be a well-rounded person. I mean, I know that sounds kind of hokey, but it's kind of like, like you said, in a world where intelligence is free and you're never going to be satisfied because you're going to have that thirst, the only thing to work on outside of that is all these other things that you could only get by things that aren't free, right? So, yeah.
Yeah. Perhaps at an individual level, there'll still be a problem of, like, being happy, being feeling good about yourself, you know, the kind of ethical, moral problems still exist.
Yeah, the interior life, yeah. Like, it's like the stuff that that intelligence can't solve.
Yeah, I think that beyond that, I think there are exterior problems that intelligence also won't be able to solve. And it's just really hard to see that until we like run into them. Cause it's not like the hunter gatherers would have set that centered their lives around food and were mostly limited by food ever anticipated that after they had all this food, they would approach a period of time where they needed to build massive, you know, 9.2 gigawatt data centers that cost $500 billion using multiple money from multiple nations harvested by taxes around the world so that they could construct an intelligence to begin solving problems for them. I don't think they would have, like, they can't predict that. And so I think we'll see, like, there'll be a version of that for modern peoples.
Yeah, but, like, if you take an alternative approach to that, like, a lot of the things that we got early on back then was through love, right? It was, like, through love of a neighbor. That led to community, love of another woman, that led to more children, further prospering in generations. And yeah, I think now we're kind of getting to a point where people are losing sight of love and what that brings into the world. And it seems more, I mean, yeah, it seems just a little bit more greedy out there than it used to. Makes you wonder, like, how that's going to play out. At least for me, that's what I'm wondering. It's like, okay, cool, like, let's go down this path and see how that plays out. But it's that's why it's worrisome, I would say. It's because it's not coming from a place of love that's building things up.
Yeah, I could see problems like that. I mean, you know, maybe the problem is once intelligence is free, there's, you know, humans go extinct. And there, you know, these interior human problems aren't really much of a problem. But just thinking about it more from like a technology as the protagonist, independent of humans, what problem does technology face or progress face that was initiated by humans? What does it face?
I think technology is like the lack of a human involvement is probably the biggest problem it faces. But I think maybe like the robots will figure that out and then we'll be extinct. that kind of goes into kind of what like all these big AI guys talk about around like where this is headed and why they're so nervous about it. I don't know. The Anon said something, because one problem is that intelligence will be more free for some than for others. We don't all have vast reserves of oil or nuclear power stations with which to power the intelligence. Also, there will be the problem of evil people with lots of money combining it with robotics to form enormous armies. Where all soldiers are interconnected to each other, as well as a super brain that will lead other states to do the same in order to be able to defend themselves, which then leads to states with the power to deploy vast robotic armies on their own. We're stepping into the Matrix. Or, no, if they step out of the Matrix.
Yeah, I think it's fair. I think, you know, it won't be absolutely free. Intelligence won't be absolutely free. But if it's, like, super desirable. And I think, unlike something like nuclear weapons, it can't be hoarded and controlled as easily. I would guess that there will be intelligence will be widely dispersed enough that large groups of people, should they want to rise up against a central authority, might not, but shouldn't. I don't imagine they'll have a hard time relative to more traditional weaponry or more kinetic weaponry.
Yeah, then Dan posted a link to his article that he wrote last month, which I think we covered, if I remember correctly. It's interesting. I'm here for it every week. Let's go back to let's go to my top stories this week. The first one is the privacy attacks on Lightning you need to know about. This is from Sopratic. He said that blinded paths are a real improvement. They're not a magic shield. Don't let anyone tell you they make your node untraceable. Here are the actual attacks to keep in mind of. And then he said the CLTV correlation, graph analysis on small nodes, payment probing, introduction, and node visibility. And then we got some spicy comments here from Darth. Keon, do you have any thoughts on this?
No, I mean, Lightning privacy isn't perfect. I mean, in most systems, if you analyze them, they always have some gap between what would be ideal, like zero information leak or whatever. And so Lightning has some exposed privacy edges that we tend to enumerate over time and try to knock them off one by one. And these are definitely some of them.
And it looks like he shared the route blinding attack analysis that T-Bass and Rusty put together here. What is route binding? Blinding. Oh, is this the onion thing? Interesting. Cool. Well, it looks like they're working on it. That's always good to see, right?
Yes.
I think it'll be more private over time. It's definitely private now if you know how to do it, from what the guys tell me in the lab.
Certainly for paying. Payer privacy is great. I think Sopratic is most, that some of these are enumerating issues that primarily reside on the receiver side.
I did try the Lex app. I did download it. Where is it at? The Lex one? Yeah, I downloaded that one. Could not connect to now. Try again later. Offline mode. Never mind. It's not working. It was working last week. Anyways.
Did you get a channel open with them?
Not yet.
Not yet. It's a nice wallet. I think it's a great competitor to something like Phoenix, I think, that really hasn't had real mobile competition in a long time. That at least a solution that doesn't use swaps like Breeze or some of these Spark wallets.
Yeah. And then Darth had a question back to him. He said, who's going to attack me and for what? Darth said, yes, blinded paths are a good improvement, but I will challenge you to trace my LM payments if you can. He goes, in my humble opinion, it is more important to run a Lightning node than just a simple BTC core or knots or whatever other one node. Yeah, there you go. Tover, you got any thoughts on privacy attacks on Lightning?
On Lightning?
Yep. Any of those stand out?
I mean, these have been well known for a while. They're important.
Cool.
Because, there's this concept that Lightning is private. But there are ways that you can be de-anonymized. So it's a good thing to know. You're ranking the state.
There you go.
Dodging bombs.
We're going to jump into my last top story this week. This was from Neat Creations. He posted, where are you sitting? And then he posted the Last Supper painting by Leonardo da Vinci. Keon, do you know what this painting's about?
I think this is a supper that Jesus had with his apostles before he was murdered.
Yeah, so this actually, because he puts here, like, where are you sitting? This is actually not them just, like, eating supper. This was when Jesus announced to them that one of them was going to betray him. And so it's interesting to see everybody's kind of asking questions like who. This is probably like John right here. Apostle John. Yeah.
Keon. I guess they didn't have razors yet. Huh?
where are you saying, Keon?
I'm probably not sitting. I might be standing. I don't know if they have standy desks yet back then, but maybe I'd use one of those. So
I'm probably not that special to be in there, but definitely listening. I want to share these because I thought this was cool because today's Good Friday, and this is what's happening around the world on this special day. There's the Pope there carrying the cross, which is a big thing because I think the past two haven't done that. People here. Then we have other people redoing like reenactments of the crucifixion. We have people here. I don't know where that's at. It looks like, is that New York or Brooklyn? Yeah. We have people here. Oh man, these are just coming up everywhere. More people here. These are like, I think this is in India. Yeah. And then we have this lady here. It's like really crying. And then here we have some more stuff here. That was on, that's in Germany. Everybody's doing the reenactments. Gosh, it gets so bloody to watch. Yeah. I think the other one was this one here. This was from The Guardian. They also shared some photos from around the world. A lot of reenactments.
I was in Spain by accident one year when they did Good Friday, and it was quite... There was a lot of festivities. It was quite fun, actually. Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff in the streets. Lots of parade-y type activities.
Yeah, so it was pretty out there. Really interesting to see. Good Friday. But yeah, thanks to Neat Creations posting this. Yeah. We're going to jump into all the... we have one more. We have actually two more. I forgot about these. So Plepo had released another zine this week. This one's called... Snacker New Zine, Making the Ephemeral Immortal. Keon, did you take a look at this one yet?
It's not a zine. This is actually talking about how there isn't a zine this week.
And okay.
This is just a one-year... it's like the one-year anniversary, as Club Poet, I think, mentioned last episode, or we mentioned about Club Poet last episode. There won't be a zine this week. And instead, she is using it as a reflection, or to reflect on... 52 issues that we did over the last year, and maybe what she would like to do next in terms of the zine. And that's what this post is about.
Cool.
And, yep.
We're going to jump into the next one. The next one that you had was a metal one with Bob Burnett from Barefoot Mining. This was an AMA.
Yeah. Bob Burnett came on for an AMA, and it was pretty awesome. Lots of great... questions and lots of great answers. A lot of people asking about Bob's BIP-110 support. I think they were the first, Barefoot Mining was the first miner to signal for BIP-110, I think. They got the first block in. So that was a conversation that came up quite a bit. But lots of other questions in there. From other, what do we have? General questions about mining, because Bob is... very, very quite knowledgeable. He's relative to other miners that are mine at a scale. I feel like he's quite approachable, quite online, and quite familiar with like Bitcoin culture and involved in it. Yeah, so lots of great stuff in here. And I recommend reading through it if you're interested in mining or how some miners might be thinking about BIP 110 and Yeah, data and blocks and stuff.
Cool stuff. That's all the stories that we have this week on Stacker News Live. Let's going to jump into the top cowboy segment. The most popular segment. In Bitcoin, it's the cowboy segment. Here we go, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, yeah. Looks like a total of nothing has changed at the top cowboys there. So
yeah, nothing is.
I'm sure everyone is very happy that they tuned in.
Tell you what, last week when Brandon was on the show, I bet you he's probably just like, he's like, wait a second, where's the top cowboys? And he's waiting for this whole time. Brandon's, we're still watching it.
Yeah, he's probably been craving it. Might have picked up a little addiction.
He's probably like, man, I'm just waiting for all show for this cowboy segment. So here you go, the top cowboys.
Yeah, we should maybe put it like a flag in our YouTube video. This could be the most. Just jump to it.
This is amazing. Look at this, all these cowboys, getting on up. Yeah.
Wow.
Who's the last one? I always like to see who the last one is. Gets my weekend going.
Oh no! Yeah, this is the most exciting part.
This is the most exciting.
Who?
Part.
Which stacker?
Like, who's the stacker? The last one. I mean, yeah, my weekend really doesn't kick off until I see who the last one is. Then I'm like, okay, weekend ready.
It's an important fact I don't think most people are.
Oh, it's yet. Zeke this week. Zeke. Oh man, can you believe it? Yeah. Crowd is going wild. Can't believe it. Oh. Boom. Zeke.
Do you have a graveyard show?
When people lost their hat, yeah. Like the longest hat that got lost, we should do that. Yeah, because, yeah, I think Tony Giorgio would have one of those.
You'll love to see it.
He raged out about.
Giddy on up! This is the top cowboys, baby. All right, that's that segment. Tune in next week for more of that.
Oh, yeah.
More of that segment. You're not going to believe who's last next week.
It'll be mostly the same people.
My weekend has started now. Let's jump into the comments this week. They get a little spicy. Neat Creation said, very interesting indeed, and need more BitX as solo mining, !! This was in regards to the Bitcoin mining 2-block reorg. What do you think about that, Keon? Do you think we need more bit axes? We have one.
I think he's generally suggesting that, you know, decentralized mining is good. And yes, I believe that we need more decentralized mining. I mean, it'd be great if we
could. How many bit axes do you have, Keon?
I have zero.
Oh.
You want
one? Topher
has one. I don't have one
because I don't want to set it up.
You just don't want to have a bit ax there.
How can I spice it up for
you? I don't have to do any. I don't do anything.
Plug it in.
Yeah, more or less I plug it in. Maybe I have to write my Bitcoin address in a terminal or something. That would be it. I just don't want to have to think about it.
Yeah, the other one's right over there. I don't think about it.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. Well, you guys are doing the work for me, you know? We all have our different roles in society, our different jobs and our tasks. And
I already got plenty of jobs I'm doing now.
Yeah.
But if I had the free time, I would a
bit axe
merchant.
Me too. Seems like a humble. I have so many jobs, even my agent has jobs. Isn't that a cool thing to say?
No, it's not.
If not BIP110, then what is the solution for clogging the network with spam? That can't be deleted from full archival nodes, Gary says, when we were talking about the layman's guide to BIP110. Topher, I go to you.
Like, what is clogging the network?
I feel like every time I use on-chain, it goes pretty through, baby. Yeah. Right through there.
One side of eBay.
It's pretty good. So I don't know. I don't know much about this stuff, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if Gary's. I don't know if Gary's actually using Bitcoin or is just participating in conversations on social media. Is kind of repeating something they've heard, but. There have been periods of time, though, that the network has been clogged with spam, where there's been quite a bit of congestion on-chain as a result of some of the ordinal stuff. But it's been a long time since then. And I think the more important thing is, like, what What is this like? If I use an analogy or like a similar situation, like what is a solution to global warming if it's not pancakes? Like that's kind of like the like because that's kind of what he's saying is that
BIP, like you make pancakes outside. Or?
Well, it's like baked in his question is the assumption that BIP 110 solves clogging the network with spam, and most of us don't support it because it doesn't solve the problem. And similarly, pancakes don't solve global warming. Gary, if you can tell me how pancakes don't solve global warming, I'll tell you maybe how BIP 110 doesn't solve global warming, or what the solution, if you can tell me what the solution is to global warming, then I'll believe that pancakes don't solve it. Is more or less what he's asking. He's like, you need to come up with a solution to prove to me that pancakes don't solve spam on Bitcoin.
Yeah. I would add to that that people are complaining that the ice caps are melting and that we're all going to drown.
Yes.
Yet everybody's beachfront property is still the same. Like, nobody's had to run away from the coast. Like, nothing's changed. Anything, the water's receding. So,
like, what did you say, Tad? You have a beachfront?
Yes. Well, it wasn't a beachfront before, but now it is.
No. So he said it, global warming is happening.
In Massachusetts?
No, but he's saying he has more
beachfront
now. Oh. He has more beachfront now because of the global warming. See, it helped two people, Al Gore and Tad. The other one was most of us can't afford the flagships! Exclamation point. At least they have more than one brand of hardware! Exclamation point. This is from Kyle Dean Daly on the Graphene OS thing.
Yeah, it seems like he believed some of the wrong things that we said in the video, and feels pretty great that Graphene will have more than one hardware provider in the future, which they won't. But that's what we thought they were saying in that video.
I mean, you could buy, like, how much is a Pixel 3? Like,
you go and buy it? They're like $150 on Amazon. If they're still there, they're probably gone now.
Also, with, like, AI, I feel like some Chad can just go out there and, like, hack a fork of Graphene to run on, like, a super cheap
for sure
smartphone or something.
Yeah. I would say, Kyle, do some AI stuff, maybe?
Yeah.
Fork your Graphene.
Send Claude to the code mine.
Yeah, but they lose all the security updates and everything. That's the only problem with all that stuff. But
that would be cool to like a Graphene fork, like a super cheap phone, $20 Walmart phone.
Yeah. The bake said, "Stay in your weight." I don't know. I feel like his. What does that mean?
We were talking about Ozempic.
No, we were talking about Ozempification of the economy.
Yeah, but bake is telling a joke.
Oh, I get it. Okay, that makes sense. Cool. And then the other one was from RB Ginja. G Ninja.
I did read that as Ginja.
Oh, Ginja.
It's like a Ginger Ninja?
That's what I thought. They said Peter Thiel is connected to the Antichrist! ! It definitely vacationers at Davos, in quotes, together if he's not it himself! Keanu, go to you.
What
do you think? What do you think about that comment?
I can't read it, but I don't. It sounds kind of just like there's a lot.
There it goes right
there.
Oh
yeah, maybe could have.
That's what he said right there. Davos is kind of weird.
They definitely.
I didn't see him in Davos this year, but I saw everybody else.
Oh, okay, saying Antichrist visit Davos and they vacation there, and Peter Thiel is an Antichrist or is connected to them. I don't really know who's the Antichrist. So I can't say whether that is true or not. That is kind of what I have to say about it.
Thanks for
the question.
How would you define the Antichrist?
How would I define the Antichrist?
Isn't
somebody
like
who's not
definition?
Yeah, somebody who's not with Christ is the Antichrist.
So there's like 50% of the population is the Antichrist?
Probably, yeah. At least 50%.
Dying.
I thought it was...
I mean, that's how I would define it, but I don't know if that's like... if that's like accurate, but I mean that's how I would define it. Cool. In that kind of definition, Peter Thiel's not, because from what I know, he's some sect of Christianity. And then I got Undisputed said, if you zap me 100k sats on SN, you get a cowboy hat. Wait a second, what does that mean?
It's a nice little scam.
Oh, I see what you're saying, Undisputed. That's how you get a cowboy hat. Is that how you get a cowboy hat?
Is he wrong?
I cannot.
Do you know how to get a cowboy hat, Stacker News?
Confirm or deny.
You don't even know, right?
I thought it's just
You're not.
You do some sort of activity on Stacker News.
See, you literally have people in Blah Blah that don't even know how to get a cowboy hat. That's how you
every
know.
It's an Easter egg. Every time I interact with Stacker News, I get
a hat. Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah. I get loose hats like
all the daily. Yeah, that's true. Blockchain Book said zap. There you go. And that's all we got for this week's episode of Stacker News Live. Keon, what are you doing this weekend?
I don't think I'm doing anything. Last I checked, I'll have to confirm with all the people that like to, you know, all the activities that I usually pick from. I'm not doing any of those. Yeah, I'm not doing anything. How about you? What are you doing, Cara?
I think today's still, you know, kind of taking it in. You know, it's Good Friday, so it's good to, you know, think about Jesus and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then tomorrow, Easter Vigil is happening tomorrow, so I'll go to that. And then Sunday's the day. So I think, yeah, it's just going to be a full weekend of, like, church stuff. I'm looking forward to that cake tomorrow at the vigil. That should be fun.
What cake do they serve usually?
So last year, me and Juan went to the Easter Vigil together.
Mm-hmm.
And, dude, they had free cake and punch at the end. Boom.
And free cake and punch?
And your boys got invited. Boom.
What kind of cake?
It was, like, all sorts of kinds. I think there's, like, two different kinds.
I thought you didn't like cake. Fun. I thought we learned that on your birthday that you don't like cake.
I don't like chocolate cake.
Interesting. But you like chocolate. You said your favorite ice cream is Rocky Road.
But that's not chocolate cake.
But it is chocolate ice cream. So you don't. You like chocolate.
No, it's
you
Dutch,
like cake.
It's Dutch chocolate.
But you don't
the
like.
Difference.
You don't like them together. Yeah. What's the difference between Dutch chocolate and other chocolates? Do you know?
Dutch.
It's made by white people.
Whoa!
I'm like trying.
Whoa, calm down.
You don't have like Mexican chocolate ever?
Oh yeah, we do. It's called cacao.
Well, it's the same.
I don't know. Is it the same? Is Mexican Mexican chocolate cacao, or is that something else?
It is. They're all. It's all cacao.
Yeah, it's cacao, right? But what's the? Because mole also has chocolate too, and I love mole.
It's also cacao.
I don't know exactly, but I like cacao.
But only if it's called
it's
Dutch.
It's good, though. It's can be, like, remember those cacao drinks? Remember those cacao drinks that we had? Those are good, dude. After one, I was done, dude.
Straight from the tree.
Me and Oliver were, like, done. We were like, what? Just spaced out. That was fun.
You guys took drugs?
No, so they make, like, cacao, but they turn it into, like a what do you call it? Like a, not a beer, but it's like a spiked drink, right?
It's like, kind of like a liqueur, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a liqueur thing.
Oh.
It's good, dude. It's so good. I kind of want one right now. It's like Baba tea, but for, like, cacao. That's the best way. It tastes like Baba tea, but, like, good.
Is that the same thing as boba tea?
Yeah, same thing. Yeah.
Baba. It's like a drink in Star Wars. So, yeah.
Baba
what
tea.
What do you get when you're a bounty hunter?
Is it called bubble tea? Bubble tea?
Boba.
Oh, well, that's
how you
dumb.
Pronounce it, I guess. I agree. It's, like, spelled weird.
I thought it was called Baba.
How do you say
Baba tea.
Baba tea would be a great name for it.
Well, that's what I always order, Baba tea. Anyways, Tover, what are you doing this weekend?
Eating fish tacos.
Oh, wow. Did you catch a fish or?
No.
Did you go to the fish market and then?
No, I leave all that up to other people.
Oh, that should be fun. Man, that's going to be fun.
I'm just going to eat tacos.
That looking forward to that. Cool stuff. Well, Stackers, have yourself a great weekend. Have a great Easter weekend, and we'll see you back here next week with some whole new stories. How about that? Keon!
Zap.